As above, so below.
Welcome to Connecting with Coincidence. I am your host, Bernard Beitman, MD. Please subscribe to our YouTube channel. It really helps get our message about meaningful coincidences out into the world. And if you want to talk with other people about your own meaningful experience, meaningful coincidence, synchronicity, serendipity, and you're around people who don't want to hear about it, we have developed the Coincidence Cafe, which meets every third Saturday of each month at 11 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. on Zoom. And you can contact me at my website, coincider.com, and I will send you the link to the registration. Also, please keep in mind that I've done a book on coincidences, meaningful coincidences, right here. And I try to be able to describe the field of meaningful coincidences, including synchronicity, serendipity, simultaneity, and seriality. And as usual, I'll start off with a story. This one is called Knocking on a Stranger's Door Opens the Doors of Perception. And it's a Yale story. And the reason I'm telling you this is because it's a Yale story, because our guest today is a Yale student. Doesn't happen too often for us on this show. Yale encouraged us to do research during the summers, requiring only a simple grant application to receive financial support to do research. And I applied and received a grant for a total of $500, which, believe it or not, in those days, 1966, was enough, 1965, to pay for my expenses. I went to Mount Sinai Hospital in Los Angeles. So in that summer of 65, after my first year, I joined a guy driving a Volkswagen Bug from New Haven, Connecticut to Los Angeles. Somewhere on Route 66, you get your kicks on Route 66, ladies and gentlemen, but that's gone now, or at least a side road. It's still there. It was the only way to go west. Then near Flagstaff, Arizona, I realized I didn't have a place to stay in LA. Oops, well, maybe I should have a place to stay. So I called a Swarthmore classmate. So Rosita happened to know that our classmate Jim Robinson was living in LA. His apartment was in the back of a big house near 30th and Vermont, not far from the University of Southern California. He welcomed me. We chatted. He told me that the owner of the house was a mystic. Oh, I'm a mystic. So I marched to the front door, knocked, and the woman answered and said, I said, "I hear you are a mystic." She said, "You are the second one." I mean, you kind of like to wonder about that, what that means. Turned out that there was a dentist who showed up before, and she was creating a mystical group. She invited me in. I told her that we studied mysticism and Hindu philosophy in philosophy class. And she said, "If you want a mystical experience, come back at midnight on Wednesday." Well, I did. She gave me a glass of milk with a blue liquid in the bottom. She said it was LSD. I'd maybe heard about it through a 1963 article in Look magazine written by a guy soon to be my friend, Andrew Weil. We spent most of the time in her living room, about five or six other people. As dawn loomed, I was sitting in a chair, gazing at my hands. They were about 6 inches apart. I saw a stream of energy emanating from my hands. The energy bands lengthened when I moved my hands further apart and constricted when I moved my hands closer together. I could see green and gold energy flowing between my fingers, and I can feel it kind of happening right now as I do this. A young woman came over to me, and she guided one of her hands between my two hands, and it was as if her hand was like the prow of a boat, moving the waves of energy away from the prow of the boat. That stimulated my interest in understanding human energy patterns, which are very real, ladies and gentlemen, and those of us who go to dance know that. And our guest today goes to dance at her own places in her own times. She's Crystal, and she lives in Germany right now. And Crystal Harrell is a best-selling author, motivational speaker, academic success coach, and PhD candidate at Yale. After growing up in public housing apartments with nine siblings, and losing a parent to chronic disease, and the story is much more than that, ladies and gentlemen. Crystal has had a long journey to be a Yale graduate student, now just working on her dissertation, which happens to be about spiritual consciousness, just happens to be. And she saw, living in poverty, that education was her ticket out of poverty. Through her academic journey, she has been awarded $670,000 and more in scholarships, including the prestigious Gate Millennium Scholarship. Crystal Stories has graced the TEDx stage. It's not easy to do that, get on TEDx, and she has. And her popular education blog benefits thousands weekly. She helps people from non-traditional backgrounds harness the power of their personal growth and self-awareness to achieve their goals. Crystal's research emphasizes the interplay between psychological health and spiritual consciousness, focusing on the enhancement of well-being through spiritual consciousness. Crystal Harrell, welcome to Connecting with Coincidence.
Thank you so much for having me, Bernie. It's a true pleasure to be here.
Well, she's laughing because we've been talking for an hour before this, and we've been having a great time.
Yes.
She's going to go to Bali pretty soon, and a good friend of mine is in Bali right now. Maybe back by the time this gets publicized, and they've had some overlapping experiences. So we're talking about them and other things. But
yes.
I've asked, as I do always, ask people to tell a coincidence story, and she's going to tell us a coincidence story. But the key part of that is her spiritual awakening in Bali. Bali is Indonesia. It's a magical place, and magical is literally true, as Crystal's been telling me. The veil is thin between our minds and greater consciousness. So, Crystal, you're on.
Thank you. I love the way you described that just so beautifully. Guess I'll try to, you're welcome. I'll try to say it shortly to tell this story, because it's very drawn out. There's a lot of details, as you can imagine, but I always preface the story and by saying that my whole life changed by a Facebook ad. And that's the only way I could really kind of describe this moment. So I had just gotten accepted into my dream school, Yale University, and we're in the thick of the pandemic. So this was 2020. And I moved to New Haven because I assumed that classes would be online or classes would be in person. This was before the shutdown, and I had already found my apartment, and I was so excited to start my new journey because I'd become the first person in my community to have made it this far. And I was really happy. And so I decorated my apartment and I got everything the way I wanted it. And then we received an email from the graduate school saying that we would not be returning to campus. So there I was in New Haven all by myself from rural Alabama. And I was just there, and I was living in my apartment day in and day out. Like most people, we were confined to our apartment or our homes. And then I decided to get on social media because there was not much else to do during the summer before classes. And I don't spend a lot of time on social media just because I like to take fast. I don't really like to spend a lot of time on the internet. But I was there and I was kind of scrolling through Facebook as usual. And I saw an ad for a 5-day virtual summit for coaches. I didn't know what a virtual coach was. I just knew that I saw Les Brown on the flyer, and I love Les Brown because I've been following him since I was 16. After being a teenager struggling with anxiety and having numerous panic attacks, I started to look for people who had made it from kind of like rags to riches, and who had made it from really disadvantaged situations and created their dream life. And Les Brown was one of those people. He was born in a situation way worse than I was. But he had created a name for himself as a public speaker. And so I've been following him for some time. And when I saw him on the ad, I had no idea he was still alive, for one. I had no idea that he was still speaking. But I commented on the ad and said, is this a free event? Like, is this real? And the organizer commented, was like, yeah, this is real and it's free. You just have to sign up. And so I did. And I was connected with a community of coaches from various backgrounds. So mindset coaches, wellness coaches, coaches from all over the world, from different fields. And one of the coaches during this 5-day summit, I think it was around day three, one of the coaches reached out to me because I was very, you know, active talking about my experience and just really excited to be in this community. And so one of the, I believe he was a mindset and spiritual growth coach. And he DM'd me on Facebook and said he would like to do a guided meditation with me. And I thought, okay, let's do this. If it's going to be for free and it's going to be virtual, I can do this. And so he basically gave me a, I think it was a 30-minute slot, and we did the guided meditation. And one of the things he asked me was, where do you see yourself living? And I thought it was a strange question because I just moved into my dream apartment in downtown New Haven. So I'm like, obviously I see myself living here, just not being here 24/7. And so I started to go into this guided meditation, and immediately, and ever since I was a little girl, I've always had visions, or I've always had dreams that would kind of, I would have them and then they would happen the way I dreamt them. And that's just had always been a part of my experience. And I never really thought it strange. I just thought that was normal. And so when I was having, it stopped for a period of my life as I was going through a lot of the trauma associated from losing a parent. And that side of me was kind of suppressed. But during this meditation, I started to see this vision clear as day. And it was a jungle. And I thought to myself, like, okay, I don't really know any jungles, but I allowed the vision as we continue with our guided meditation, the vision became clearer and clearer. And in this vision, not only was I living in the jungle, but I was living inside of a bamboo house inside of this jungle. And that's when it started to get a little strange, because I thought, why would I live inside of a, first of all, why would I be in the jungle? I don't really like nature. I wasn't like a nature person, really. I was just, I don't like bugs. And I thought for sure I'm not going to deal with lizards and reptiles. So like that probably was not going to happen. But I was there. And in this vision, inside of this bamboo house, there was a bed. And above the bed, there was a big kind of sign that said believe above the bed. So it's like a picture that usually people have pictures above their bed, bed frame. But this one in my vision said believe. And then I walked over to the wall in this vision, and there was a mirror kind of leaning against the wall. And when I looked in this mirror, I looked just like I looked in my waking life. So there was, I knew that this vision was very recent. And that it was gonna, that I wasn't any older, any younger, that this was something that was happening in the present moment or really close to it. And so once I saw that, I kind of fast forwarded in this vision, and I saw myself out to dinner in this place that I had no idea about. And I remember looking at myself in this vision, and I was so happy. And I've been happy because I had achieved all of my goals of going to school and becoming this successful student, graduate student, and going to an Ivy League. And so I had achieved what I thought to be happiness. But when I looked at myself in this vision, I was really happy, like not an outside in happiness, but I was smiling from the inside out, and my aura was so bright. And as I was seeing myself in this vision, there was someone sitting across the table from me. And I couldn't see this person. I couldn't see their physical body, but I saw their essence. I saw almost like their energetic feel, if you will. They were, I just recognized it. And so I remember thinking like, oh, okay. Like, you know, I didn't have any attachment to this person. I just, you know, noted that in my vision. And so I come out of this guided meditation with this coach, and he asked me, you know, what did I see? I tell him everything. And I told him that I don't know where any jungles are. I never left the United States. I was born in Alabama. There's no jungles in Alabama or anywhere close. So I told him I would figure it out. I would, you know, do a quick Google search. And so I did after our session ended. And the first thing that showed up was Bali. And I thought, where's Bali? And then I did more research, found out it was in Indonesia. And then I started to go to YouTube, and I saw that there were a group of people called digital nomads who were living in places like Bali and Thailand, in various places in Southeast Asia. And they were just traveling, and they were making money, and they were doing, living life and exploring. And I thought, oh my God, like, I could do this. And the more I kind of like researched it, the more I felt that this was a reality that was becoming more clear for me. And so I just decided, after doing a ton of research, someone said to me, they said, I can tell you everything you need to know about Bali or about going anywhere, but until you make the decision to go for yourself, you'll never know what it's like. And that was like the piece. That's what I needed to hear in order to get me to sell everything in my apartment, everything in my beautiful apartment that I just spent months decorating. I didn't tell anyone in my family what I was planning to do. I just made up in my mind that I was going to take a chance. And so I bought my plane ticket. I got my visa. I paid for my visa at least. And then Bali closed its borders. And so to make a long story short, there was this period of kind of like me going back and forth with what I thought to that I saw in my vision to what I felt true in my heart and what I was actually seeing that, you know, the country was closed. There was no way I was going to make it in. But it turns out that I had to forgive someone before I left. And once I did, the next morning, I had a copy of my visa in my inbox and I left the next week.
You had to forgive somebody? You had to forgive somebody?
I had to forgive someone.
And somehow that had something to do with being able to get your ticket to Bali. We'll just leave that alone for now. Go ahead.
Yes.
Go
ahead. Okay. Yes, because once I did, the next morning I woke up, I had my visa, and my agent told me, you're good to go. Here's everything you need to make it to the country. We look forward to seeing you soon. And so I hopped on a flight by myself. I spent 3 hours in the airport because I had to have every document under the sun in order to get there. But I made it in on Valentine's Day. And that changed. I spent 5 days in quarantine in Jakarta before flying to Bali. But that changed everything for me. And that's when I had my spiritual awakening in the islands of Gili Ti, in the island of Gili Ti, which is a set of islands off the coast of Bali. Bali is an island, but the Gili Islands are much smaller. And so, yeah, that's pretty much my coincidence story, how that Facebook ad really changed everything for me.
And the idea that you're describing was a coincidence, yes, Facebook ad, but also Les Brown volunteered to do a guided meditation for you, which we don't have necessarily a great explanation for, do we?
Oh, no, it was Les Brown. He was one of the guest speakers at this event. And then one of the coaches who was also
one of the coaches volunteered. Mm-hmm. Okay. Why did that coach volunteer?
I have no idea.
Yeah, well, that's one of those things that I like to be able to emphasize, that stuff comes out of nowhere sometimes, that it helps you be able to go where you're going. So that was like, what? So why'd that happen? And then the key thing among all these things is that you took a chance on chance.
Yes.
And that's one of the ideas I like to suggest to people with coincidences, is that you got to take a chance on chance. And it's chancy to do that, just to play around with the terms. And you were determined. And you were determined because you had a vision or dream of being in the jungle. And you saw yourself in the mirror looking about the same way you did in real life. Yeah. And somehow running through that mind of yours was like, I got to go there. And there's more to it, but I got to go there. And I want to ask, I have a feeling, and maybe our audience can get it, but you were feeling the pull. You were feeling probably even a push to get yourself over to Bali for some reason. And then Gili Island afterwards, which is, as you have said, is a magical place to be on.
Yes.
And where the veil is thin, and where you were able to communicate with certain plants in nature that you you like me were able to communicate with trees. And I'd like to be able to say that there's a guy that's going to be on the show from HeartMath that is measuring tree activity just with electrodes on them and other things. So there's more and more that's happening of being able to recognize that trees communicate. And the way they communicated to me, as I mentioned before we started, is mostly telepathic and some energy. But the trees in Bali were loud for you. And they were energetically loud. I wonder if you would mind explaining that to our audience.
Yes, that's you described it perfectly. I will try to do my best to put it into words. I'm a better writer sometimes than I am a speaker, so it's easy for me to sit down with my words than to say them all the time. But I will say that what I saw was that, like you said, they have this energy, almost like this consciousness, that is not necessarily words. So trees don't, at least I think sometimes it just happens depending on the person or the situation. At least what I saw, it wasn't necessarily words, it was mostly energy. And like you said, it was like this telepathic almost communication. And I saw their aliveness. I just saw everything about who they were, and especially the tree that I was sitting under while I was there. And it was as if they were just letting me, they were first talking, communicating with each other and having this energetic almost dance with each other, but also with me and with the people who were also around me. I mean, we know that trees give off oxygen. We know that they give off, you know, the thing that we need to breathe. But I literally saw that on a level, almost like a love level, as if I do this because I am love and because you are too. And this is the way that we communicate with each other. And I think, I truly believe that that's always happening, because I haven't been able to unsee it since I've had that experience. But I think we're not always aware of it when it does happen.
We're not always aware of what.
The love and the shared consciousness between us and nature, because we always think that nature is something apart from us or outside of us, but we are nature. We are literally a part of it. Our everything that our physical body is made up of, in even our spiritual and energetic body, is the same that we feel and see in nature. And so I think that separation intellectually is keeping us disconnected a lot of times, because we're stressed or we have different concerns about our jobs or about whatever else. So we don't really take the time to sit and be with that awareness. But I really believe that it's happening 24/7, that trees and nature, that we're always a part of it. We're never disconnected from it.
And what do you, what does what you just said about our connection to nature have to do with spiritual consciousness?
So I'll first start by defining what I mean by spiritual consciousness, because there are a lot of definitions for consciousness. There's a lot of different forms of consciousness in the literature and the research. There's critical consciousness. There's a lot of different forms of consciousness. But what I mean by spiritual consciousness is this awareness of our spiritual nature as human beings having a human experience, as spiritual beings having a human experience, and not the other way around, as human beings having a spiritual experience. So I mean that we are constantly aware of the formless energy that animates us, or I think it's been described as a life force. So spiritual consciousness is just that awareness of our spiritual nature. And I believe that what I mean between like what I just described with the trees and spiritual consciousness is that when we are aware of our spiritual nature and we're aware of how connected we are with not just nature or things outside of us, but with ourselves, that life becomes a lot clearer and a lot brighter. And so just having that awareness, at least in my own experience, of knowing that I'm never separate from my environment or from nature, that it's all one, has really aided, I guess, my spiritual growth and my well-being towards life. Because since I've had that experience in Bali, that spiritual awakening, I've never had a panic attack. I've never had anxiety or depression. This is someone that dealt with extreme anxiety from watching my dad die from cancer. I literally watched him die. And so you can imagine, as an 11-year-old, what that did to me. I actually remember the moment I became traumatized. My hearing basically became muffled. Words stopped making sense. Like that whole experience that you would probably see in a movie happened to me. And it took 14 years before I could get in a state where I wasn't afraid to be in my own body, and I wasn't trying to kind of like, I don't really know how to describe anxiety, but I've heard people describe it as almost if you want to jump out of your own body, as if you don't know, you no longer want to be inside of your own body. And so it was that for 14 years.
And then you went to Bali and, among other things, recognized your spiritual consciousness connecting with the trees, and that you saw
Yes.
the oneness of life.
Yes.
And human beings are not just separate, but are part of nature, which is
Yes.
so important a message for human beings to get, particularly now, is we just are destroying our nest. It's happening right in front of us. And how is the spiritual consciousness that you are studying going to help humanity?
I believe in so many ways. Already, it's not a very expansive field right now, area of research right now. But in so many ways, it's been shown to be related with reduced levels of anxiety, depression, and also increased levels of well-being. In samples, international samples, there was a sample that we studied this in Switzerland, I believe, in young adults. And I'm looking at young adults in the US for my dissertation. And I really believe that once people realize our spiritual nature, and once they realize the power of how our thoughts and perceptions create the reality that we see, that of course you are more aware and you're more conscious and intentional about the life that you give certain thoughts and certain perceptions. Because it's true that we don't see the world as it is, we see the world as we are. And I think that having this research to back what spiritual communities have known forever will be a good way of kind of bringing that connection back into mainstream, because a lot of people are searching for a connection. And I think the pandemic really, it really showed a lot of people how disconnected we are as a society. And it really revealed a lot to us, but we can move forward with new awareness now. And I think a lot of people are ready to be more connected with each other and with themselves. But once you get that connection with yourself, the connection with others just comes as a default almost.
Really? I have my doubts about that. I think it can help with people who are already spiritually connected or have developed the spiritual consciousness. Was happening when you and I were talking before we started recording. But I think I'd like you to be able to tell me how that happens with people who hate other people. Yes.
See, that's interesting, because we also studied this awareness in, so the concept or the theoretical framework behind spiritual consciousness is called three principles or innate health. And so we studied this awareness in populations that have been exposed to these teachings of the three principles or innate health, and populations who haven't. And it's the same across both populations, that people who have this insight of their spiritual nature enjoy a better well-being. The only thing is, people who hate don't have that insight. And so there's something you can't give to them. You can't give away insight. Insight and wisdom comes from within. And so I don't know, as far as maybe that's something that still needs to be explored. How do you teach people who hate how to be more loving and more spiritual? I don't know. But I know that it doesn't come from anything that is going to be taught to them, like something that's going to be outside of them. It's going to have to come from their own life experience and their own personal insight. And maybe that's just going to take another soul cycle. I don't know. But we are all here doing our part and having this kind of spiritual evolution, if you will, as a part of the mass consciousness.
Yeah. As you probably know, I think that awareness of synchronicity can help. So that we're talking about how to start people in the direction of spiritual consciousness.
Exactly.
And there's some data that suggests that well-being is increased by synchronicity awareness.
Yes.
And it's the problem of hate. You know, probably the Southern Poverty Law Center in Alabama. Anyway, they study study people who are in poverty and how law works against them. And Alabama is certainly a place where Black people in particular are mistreated by the law, to say the least. And so they are trying to be able to define the hate groups in the country and be able to alert people to their existence. And I wonder how that those people who hate can be brought to a more loving place, because it's better for everybody, including for them. And I, you have to wonder the same thing, although that's not exactly what you're working on.
I wonder the same thing. But I think that is outside of my scope of beingness. I think that the only way to change someone is to change ourselves. And it's really true. Like, we can't expect to be a light in a dark area if we don't come with the light. Because I think a lot of times, and I think the reason why we see ourselves in the situation that we're in now with society is that there's always groups of people trying to tell another group of people who to be or who to become. And I think when you, although love, being a loving human being would be better for the person, the individual in the collective, we all know this, the people who are aware, they know. But we can't force someone to see the light unless they have that experience for themselves. And the only way we probably have any type of chance of them having that experience is if we continue to show up as the light, is if we continue to work on our own spiritual evolution, and we continue to show up as conscious, spiritually conscious human beings, doing the work on ourselves first, and then allowing that energy and that light to radiate into our environment. That's the only way that I've seen so far in my own experience, because we're not separate. We're different, but not separate. So what we do and the evolution that we take affects all of humanity. We see that with hate, and it's the same for love, but it's even more powerful. So I don't know. I would love to see if science, the science of spirituality, could provide an answer for that. But I think the only way that we are going to get close to a solution is if we continue to show up, the people who are aware, and the people who want to do the work.
Yeah, I think that's very true. And showing up is what I'm asking about. I think you got to do this weird thing called talking with people. It's not necessarily just talking. We both know that on the dance floor, you don't have to talk to be able to communicate with somebody with energy. So the energy is very important as part of the talking. There's got to be a heart element to the communications. And what I'm asking you about is the idea of showing up needs further elaboration, is what I think.
Yes, absolutely. I agree.
Could you elaborate?
I can do my best to use the words to elaborate.
Showing up.
But I think the best way to show up, at least the way I define it and experience it in my own life, is just being authentically you, because I think showing up means that we have actually recognized the patterns and the beliefs and the perceptions that are keeping us in a state of unawareness or unconsciousness. And we're willing to acknowledge it, one, and to do the work in order to move forward. So I think that if we can kind of like advocate for that more, or more people who, like I said, want to show up and want to be the light in these communities and for themselves and in their own lives, will actually be able to show up and be able to make a change. But the only way I've seen it so far is to just be who you really are, to be all of who you are, a spiritual being having a human experience.
Well, as I think you know, you can't be yourself in certain groups, otherwise they make fun of you in one form or another.
I mean, you can't technically, you can be whoever you want, I believe. But we do have a choice about the way we perceive not being ourselves, or the threat of being ourselves in certain groups. Because at least from my own experience, I went through most of my life not being who I really am, and really shutting down in certain communities or certain groups of people, because I didn't want them to think I was weird, or that I was trying to be the smart kid, or that I loved education, because I always loved education. But I kind of like kept that to myself for a long time. And that caused a lot of pain. And so when I just started showing up, which means that I started to recognize those patterns, and when I was doing it and then not doing it, that's when life got better. And the groups that I wanted to accept me started to accept me when I stopped caring so much about it. But it's always our thoughts about what people will think, and we can't control everyone's thoughts. So say do it.
we can't control everybody's thoughts. And that's and earlier on you said something about our thoughts create reality.
Yes.
Could you tell us what you mean by that? And maybe if you could relate that to synchronicity, it would be nice.
Yeah, I'll try to relate it to synchronicity. But what I meant by it is basically, how we think about a certain situation, it creates the situation that we are perceiving. So in literature, one example, let's look at perceived stress. So I look at the connection between perceived stress and psychological health in young adults. Just because an event that happens that may seem stressful to one person, another person might perceive that event not stressful at all. So the levels of perceptions and the levels of thoughts that we have about certain stressors in our environment is what actually creates the stress and releases that stress response in our bodies to create the health outcome that we experience. And so when I say thoughts create our reality, I really mean that the way we think about and the thoughts that we give life to, it's actually creating our lived experiences. And that's what I hope to really highlight in my research with spiritual consciousness, is really connecting our spiritual and psychological nature and really highlighting that connection between the two. But as far as like explaining that in a more detailed way, I probably just need some more research and some more time to think about it. but I will say, when it comes to the synchronicities, I wasn't aware of them until I got to a place of awakening, if you will. I wasn't really aware that, I'm sure they had been happening in my whole life, but I wasn't aware of them until I started to make the changes and become more involved in my own spiritual evolution. And honestly, it started with how I was thinking about my life and who I was. And I just decided that I was going to try something different, because what I was doing up until that point wasn't quite working. I had achieved everything that I wanted externally, but there was still an emptiness. There was a disconnection between me and what I call God. You can call it higher self, universe, source, Allah. But that there was a disconnect there. And I was hoping to get closer to it. And that's when the synchronicity started. So I have so many in Bali. I just expect it. I like walk outside and I just expect them to happen. In certain environments, it happens a little less, but in some it happens just like this.
And in Bali, they happen more because whatever we mean, other people hear us say, the veil is thinner in Bali. So there's it's easier to connect with higher consciousness and feel more part of the oneness that is around us all the time. In Bali, particularly Gili Island, one of them where you like to go is like even more so in that direction, where you had your spiritual awakening on Bali, I guess. But that's all part of then opening up, and you started seeing more synchronicities. Could you maybe think about one of the synchronicity that you really was outstanding to you or in Bali, if you can remember?
I can remember a bunch.
Give us a couple.
Okay. So one of them was when I was living in Ubud. Ubud is a center area in the island of Bali. And in Balinese, it actually means medicine. And I definitely received a lot of healing in Ubud. But I was riding around on my scooter and I was realizing that there were some vitamins or some supplements that I didn't have there that I missed from the US. I ran out and I really needed some, like really bad. I was looking for some like organic probiotics, and it had to be organic. I needed to be like 100% organic, because that was the only way I was going to take them. And so there was a very specific type of probiotics I was looking for. And I couldn't find it, and I'm by myself. So I was a solo traveler during this time. And I remember just thinking, I was riding around from place to place. And then I just decided to just let it go. And I said, I'm going to finish working on, I was still in school. So I was like, I'm going to finish my classes and the classwork, and then I'll look in the morning. And so the next day I got up and I went to a cafe, and someone started looking at me, and I'm looking at this person like, hi, do I know you? And I never met them in my life. They just kept staring at me the whole time. And then as he started to walk out of the cafe, he stopped and he was like, I'm so sorry. I just had to come over and say something to you. And then we started talking a little bit, found out where they were from. And then he said, I actually have probiotics. I sell organic probiotics, and I have some in my scooter. And I said, oh my God, I've been driving around literally all yesterday trying to find some organic probiotics. He's like, yeah, I sell them. Had the whole brand, his whole company was around organic probiotics. Gave me a bottle and I had the probiotics that I needed. So that was like one where I was just like, there's no way. And we weren't even talking about it. He just randomly said it. And I was like, oh, wow. Wow, that is very what a I don't believe in coincidence, but like what a major synchronicity.
That's a beautiful one, and
Yeah.
I like your description of it. And it's, believe it or not, these are not uncommon. And by
Yeah.
these, I mean it's a form of coincidence in which what you're seeking is also seeking you.
Yes.
And he was a salesman, so somehow he could pick up your need. And because Bali is like that, it's where you can pick up energy and information
Yeah.
from people's auras. It's just
Yes.
easier, because
Yes.
there's not a lot of interference, and you can do
Yes.
that on the dance floor too. You pick up stuff, and I've done that, and it's like, okay, it's there, so you could pick it
Yeah.
up. And
Yes.
he came over because he could sense something about you.
Yes. Yeah.
And that kind of sensing something about the other person and coming up to, particularly since you tend to be a person to whom people come up to rather than a person who goes out to other
Yeah.
people, that you're relatively open and he could find you. So that's a wonderful example
Yeah.
of I'm seeking something and it shows up in some kind of mysterious way, and
Yes.
you happen to be in the right place at the right time for it to happen, because he was there.
Yes.
And right place, right time, I call human internal GPS. So
Yes.
it's a wonderful example of a coincidence form. So thank you for that. And please tell us another Bali one.
I guess another one was the day that I met a celebrity there. So in Bali, there's usually a lot of like celebrities and a lot of people of kind of like high influence, I suppose, that kind of live there because it's a very the locals don't really they don't care about celebrities to say the least. They just people are people and they treat everyone the same. They love and they laugh and they smile and it's coming from a genuine place and they do that to everyone. Doesn't matter where you're from or who you are. And so I was one day at a cafe called Sayuri, and I was watching a Joe Dispenza video, and he talked about how when you have this almost coherence between your heart and your mind, how things just start happening. He talks a lot about synchronicities and coincidences. And he was talking about this at the end of the video, and I think it was maybe a 30-minute video, but that was one of the last things that he said. So after he finished it, I stopped. The video ended. I closed down my computer and I felt someone staring at me. And so I kind of like look up and there's an older gentleman kind of like looking at me and I'm just like, hi. And I smile and he smiled back and he said, hi, I'm Russell. And I was like, hi, I'm Crystal. And then I paused and I was like, wait, someone said something about a Russell Simmons living here. I was like, are you Russell Simmons? And he was like, yes. And I was like, no. And then he was like, yes. And then I like he called me over and we started talking. And for those of you who don't know, Russell Simmons was one of the original. So he was one of the original members of Run DMC, and his brother started it. And he's literally like the godfather of what we know as hip hop. And this started he started his own kind of like I guess it's a producing I forget the name of it, kind of like a record agency, I guess. And he's a very, very influential person in the States. And so when I met him just from just sitting there, it was just like this high energetic interaction. He introduced me to his publicist and or someone that works on his book for it with him. And he decided that, he wanted me to help him with his next book. And so I wrote kind of a chapter about Mother Bali and the gifts of Mother Bali and sent it over to him. And we just, yeah, kind of stayed in contact, but it was just like a very, for me, it was like a very like beautiful experience because I was not expecting that. And it really raised my vibration like a ton because I thought like, oh my God, like this is someone who is like really, really like has done a lot of like great things in their lives and in their life. And it was just like a really cool experience.
And not only did you meet him, he's looking at you. I mean, again, you're being looked at. It's the same thing. And you not only were open to it, listening to Joe Dispenza and being on Bali, but also
Yeah.
you got to work with him and write a chapter on Bali for his book. So you got
Yeah.
to continue to interact with him.
Yeah. He was very nice too. He even invited me to my first yoga class. And so the first time I did yoga was with Russell Simmons. And I was literally in the yoga class and in one position where we have to hold out our foot kind of in front of us and the other leg is straight. And it was my first time doing yoga, so obviously I don't know any of the names of the poses, but I literally was sat there in this position. I'm like, I'm really doing yoga with Russell Simmons right now. Like, how could I have made this up? So it was just like, yeah, like a mind-blowing experience. I
Well,
used to watch
good.
him on TV.
Well, good. I mean, I'm glad we're doing this because it's good to hear about your research in spiritual consciousness. This is also a program about synchronicity, and Bali is at least for you and probably for a lot of other people, a place where a lot of them happen. So, I mean, I'd like to hear some more. Tell us another one.
Let's see. There was one where I was talking. This was after I met my partner, and I was talking with him one night. And I was saying, like, you know, I would love to do more podcast interviews because this was right around the time that I had published my first book, and I was getting, you know, a few requests to do to come on and talk about my book and talk about my experience with being from public housing apartments and now being at Yale. And it started to slow down a little bit during this time. And I was just, you know, telling him, like, I would love to do it because I feel like I'm flying when I'm talking with the host, and it just feels so natural. And I love, you know, talking about this experience. And then the next day, I'm riding my scooter and someone stops me and they wave me down on the street. And so I knew this person, but we had seen each other because he was living in Ubud and I was at this time living in Canggu, which are about 45 minutes apart. So I had no idea they were in the same area. But they flagged me down, like, to stop me on my scooter. And so I stopped and I turned around to go to the cafe. And he basically, we talked for maybe about 5 minutes before he said, "Hey, I'm looking for someone to do a podcast episode with me if you want to come back to my villa." And so that happened. And so this is someone also who is very influential, and they're very, like, just kind-hearted person. And we recorded a podcast interview that day, and literally it was less than 24 hours before that I said I wanted to do another one, and then that kind of happened where he flagged me down and we did it.
That one there, where your thought, where you say, I want something, including the probiotics, where you have a thought about a need or a want, I want to be on a podcast, I need a probiotic. And somehow that is seems correlated with the thing actually happening. And that's actually that's what I thought you meant about our thoughts create reality, because what you were talking about before, I said expectation creates experience, that the filter you use influences how you respond to that particular environment. And that's true very much about synchronicity, is what when you how you think about synchronicity depends on your world view and how you see reality in the first place. So that's the filter thing of stuff coming in, and that's part of what you're studying. But this one is probably more interesting, at least to our audience, where you think of something of you need, and some guy flags you down because you want to be on a podcast and you haven't seen him for a while. It's almost like the signal goes out from you, and it finds some place. And Bali is a place to do that. I understand the veil being thin and not a lot of the stuff going on. And so that can land in somebody's mind in a way that then allows them to flag you down and say, there's something here with this woman and with me.
I mean, I feel like it happens. I agree. Both statements, both situations, I believe are definitely true. I believe that the signal that we give out attaches to its likeness, and we create that through whatever we perceive and what we think is possible or what we believe to be the worldview that we're taking based on the stories and the evolution that we have as this as a human being in this physical reality. But I listen to a lot of people who talk about their near-death experience, and I've always kind of been, like, really fascinated by people who've had these experiences. And one a lot but between all the stories, I probably watched about 100 interviews by now. But a common thread between most, if not all of them, is that they talk about when they're in this space of creation. Some people call it heaven. It does, I think the name varies depending on the person and their lived experience. But they say that when they're in this space, that as soon as they think a thought, that very thing is created in this space. And what you just described kind of reminded me of that experience of people describing that experience and their near-death experience, because I really believe that that's true. I also had a similar experience when I was in Bali, that as soon as I thought something, I immediately had the answer to it before I even finished thinking the thought or asking the question. So it was just like, yeah, like I really do believe our thoughts are powerful. They're really powerful.
Yeah, and as we were talking about before, people get afraid of their own power.
Yeah.
So when you have the power to think things and they're created, however long the time takes, you may be thinking bad thoughts. I mean, thoughts that aren't so good for you too.
Right.
And so you're helping to create negative feedback for yourself. And
true.
What you have to be able to do when you do that is that, whoops, what can I learn from this
Yes.
to not be able to do it again? And there's more and more people talking about how you got to clean up your mind and be able to think the positive things. It doesn't mean you can't pay or you shouldn't pay attention to the bad things, because
Right.
there's a lot of bad things going on this planet right now, ladies and gentlemen.
Right.
And we got to do something about it or not. Depends on what you think. Some people just wanted to get spiritual up and just be advanced somehow, and that's enough for them. I think that's spiritual bypassing, where you're missing what's going on here. Where you got to do an interaction between the spiritual and the stuff going on here, and bring them both into some dynamic. So you think that's true too?
Absolutely, because like I said, we're spiritual beings having a human experience. So if we totally live in the spiritual, we're going to miss the entire experience that we're having as in this physical reality. And the same is true. If we're totally physical, we're going to miss the spiritual nature and this in the beauty of life that happens when you're aware of this non-physical, formless energy that animates all of life. So I definitely agree with you that spiritual bypassing is real and it happens in a lot of communities and it happens to a lot of people. But I think that there's no advancement in humanity unless we all go together. That's why it's called collective. What Carl Jung calls collective consciousness is important and it's real. But yeah, I definitely agree with you that there's I teach people about intentional thinking versus positive thinking. Both are important, but I think with intentional thinking, we allow the negative feelings and the negative thinking to occur, but we don't attach ourselves to it. So it's almost as if we acknowledge it and we allow space. It's almost as if you kind of like interview it and just ask it, like, why are you here? Like, I really do believe that we should talk more to ourselves because our bodies are very intelligent. And the energy that animates our body is very intelligent. So if you just talk to it and acknowledge it, maybe that will offer it rest. If we offer our demons love or whatever you are, darkness or our negative thoughts or whatever you want to call it, if we offer that love, then we transform it. And that's what I hope the spiritual community is more intentional about doing, is transforming the darkness into light, because we have that power. We just got to believe it.
You got to believe it first, and then you got to be able to work on doing it, because it just doesn't come from believing. You got to be able to do it. Now, the idea of intentionality and being able to be mindful about your own intentionality, and which you are think we're saying has to do with just letting it go, letting the intention go.
Yeah.
And one of the hardest places to do that is in love relationships.
Oh, yes.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
How do I even know that as possible? Because we were talking about that a little before we got on the show, and it's being able to know that you can have what I call an expectation video about a relationship, and just let those expectation videos, which have intentional qualities to them, I want this to happen, I like this movie, to be able to let those go has taken me, and it's still I'm still working on it. It's taken me. I'm hoping you learn it faster than I did, because I mean, it's taken me a while on this one, a lot of bumpy rides on this one. That we have to do that not only in love relationships, but with other relationships, because it's love is around here, and to be able to love not just the romantic partner, but also love others is to also not expect from them something that maybe they're not willing, wanting, able,
already
already to do.
Yeah.
And I have one example of that for the Coincidence Project. We had a person who was very good with synchronicity. He really knew a lot, but he pretty much said that I'm the smartest guy in the room, and I know how to do this whole thing better than me, who like spent a long time putting it together. And he put me down in various ways. I'd hear about it, and he's got a great heart. He's got a great synchronicity thing. But his intention was still to be recognized as the smartest guy in the room. And that got in the way, so that after a while, with a lot of bumpy things happening, he didn't really continue with the Coincidence Project, except in a less central way. And he's a good guy.
I'm sure. Yeah.
But his intention, would you comment on what I just told you?
No, I was saying that you're right.
What am I right about?
No, about how his intention behind him showing up in the way he showed up kind of got in the way of your collaboration or the work that you were to do together. But I think that that's just a soul lesson for him, and maybe you too.
Definitely for me.
Yeah.
And it was hard. It was hard on me with the stuff he put on me. And something like that happened later. I mean, in another group, and I was right on it faster. I saw it happening from the beginning, and was able to respond to it faster. I mean, when it took a long time for this guy to disengage himself, it took less time for this new person in this new group to be disengaged, because I was able to accelerate that process because I had seen that intention was being held in a way that was a kind of hammer on the rest of us. And the more I do this coincidence stuff, and the more attention I get to it, I get from it, is the more intentions come out. Oh, blah, 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 got to do this, got to do that, got to make that happen. Yeah, the more I've got to give them up, even as they come up. So it becomes almost like a mental discipline.
It
really helps for those people who run 400 meters, for example, and be able to do that. Yes, Crystal has run 400 meters a lot of times, and I can't run. I couldn't run that far that fast, but I could do 50 yards pretty well. And when you learn the discipline of being an athlete, and there are other ways to do that as well, but being an athlete, you learn to move your body according to standards you set for yourself. So you train your body not to learn and to keep learning how to learn. And that's also true of what we need to do in life, is we need to not just learn stuff, but learn how to learn, so our minds remain flexible to new inputs, because they'll come and we have to have ways of processing them. So the body-mind relationship between athleticism and just spiritual development are much more closely related than I ever thought until I just said that to you.
Oh, that's beautiful. I'm just like taking all of this in, because the way that you described that and explained it was just spot on and so perfect and better articulated than anything I could have said. Well, it's what I felt, but I could never say it the way that you did.
Yeah, and let's talk about, you brought up how you can write, but you can't talk as well. I mean, you said that a couple of times, and this, let me tell you that it takes practice to talk the brilliant way that I talk. You know, I can talk with this clarity because I've talked with muddy ideas many times. I've gone on too long about stuff, gone into details too much. But because I've learned to write and keep writing, the writing has helped sharpen my ability to talk in the way that you are currently respecting, which I very much appreciate. And so I'm just saying, Crystal, just keep practicing. Write, keep practicing, and take a chance on the chance opportunity that you're given to talk, even if you feel like you shouldn't do it, because it's probably going to come out better than you think. But that's practice. It's like learning, again, learning how to do it, but you got to do the practice under circumstances like this. So that's why I appreciate your saying the way I said it, but you can say, you can do it too. And you, because you have the background for it, I've had a lot more practice at this than you have, but you are very articulate. And I just suggest you continue taking a chance on chances, let your mouth ramble when you don't know what you're talking about. Because that's what I do. And it's a lot.
I hate that feeling, though. I really hate when I catch myself rambling and I have no idea what I'm talking about. And then when I become aware of it, that's when it gets worse.
That's much worse when you become aware of it. I was returning a punt once, five guys had missed me. And I got, as I was returning the punt, and then I'm thinking, oh, five guys missed me because I was just running. I was in the moment, and that's when I got hit. I mean, that's what happens when you get out of the flow. So you will learn to trust yourself to pick up when you're overdoing it, when you're going into a lot of detail, when you're not really being that clear. Because what you're hearing me do is a form of rambling that you have been very kind to respect and think I'm doing it well. It's just letting it go. It's like hitting going to do 100 meters. You're just going to go. You're going to dance. You're just going to go. But you just have a little background and you stumbled and made some problems. You had some problems, but those are all educational, and you know that too.
Yes. Wow. I'm going to have to go back and watch this recording again and take notes on that. My intellectual brain is just like, oh, you have to write this down. But it's I guess for me, it's so inspiring to hear you say this, because I always wonder how people do it. People that I admire, like yourself and Wayne Dyer and Joe Dispenza, and the people who have created the spiritual space for people who are curious about their own spirituality. They just speak and it comes, it just flows, and they don't prepare notes. I know, because Wayne Dyer talked a lot about how he never prepared. He said he just kind of just goes. And I always wonder, how can you just speak that way so beautifully and not have any notes prepared?
Because you know the subject.
Yeah.
It's very much like being on Bali, where the coincidences happen. You're kind of connected with what you already know.
Yeah.
And when you get into that flow of things, then the stuff comes. And part of it is that you're listening to me and I'm talking to you. So you're helping me be articulate. It's not just that I'm doing it. You listen well, and your open-heartedness and open-mindedness allows me to be more relaxed, clearer. It helps. So this is a dance like so many other things.
I thought the same thing right when you said that. I thought dancing. I really appreciate education. That was a way that I connected with my dad before he passed away. He would teach me how to read and write. So I was able to read and write before I started school. And he would always tell me, you know, like, do it like this, and then pretty soon you won't need my help. And I thought, no, I always need your help. And it was just like those moments where I'm learning, I felt more empowered. And so for me, having this openness, as you, you know, stated, it's because I just genuinely love learning. I love knowledge and wisdom and understanding, because I feel more powerful when I can understand how things work or understand the system behind certain, you know, certain things. So I just really appreciate you explaining it to me in the way that you did, the clear and concise way that you did.
Well, it's a little like your father, I'm glad to do that with you. And I'm curious, because you said this before, that knowledge gives you power. And certainly there is a line that says knowledge is power. It's been around for a while.
Yeah.
And I don't feel that so much anymore. My knowledge got me into medical school, for example.
Yeah.
And it got me, you know, promoted to becoming a professor and chairman. So that knowledge had that kind of power. Where I am now, it's how new stuff is more like the fun of learning. It's just fun to satisfy curiosity. It's fun to find out how this thing works, because I went to Yale, I went to Stanford, I went to a good small college, Swarthmore, and I've always had the feeling they didn't tell me something.
Yeah.
They didn't tell me something. And you found out that something in Bali. You found out that something in Bali, and you started, and you could.
But it's also enhanced the way I've gone through the educational system as well, because I used to think, and I don't want this to be controversial or anything like that, but I used to think that in order to be a grad student, you had to be stressed out. You had to be, and I know there's a lot of grad students who deal with anxiety and pressure. I was one of them. So like, I understand that 100%. But since coming into this awareness, I realized that I don't have to be stressed out and I don't have to have panic attacks, and that I can actually enjoy this process of learning and becoming a researcher and giving myself some grace, because I don't have to know all the answers and I never will, but I don't ever want to, because I want to continue to have that curiosity kind of quenched as I'm going through this process.
Beautiful. I'm very, very glad for you to be able to do that for yourself. And it could, all it does is enhance learning. That's the only thing about it. When you get relaxed, I mean, it's true with sports too. I mean, you can, when you kind of like to go with it, but you're going for it and relax and going for it with it. But it's a kind of combination that is like really fun to be in. I just love doing it, but I just love doing it. I mean, it's both of them right at the same time. So,
well, I love this so much.
Well, I'm glad you do too. And we're going to be having to end. And if there's anything you'd like to leave our audience with, maybe the name of your book, at least so they know it, Crystal Clear. And you've been crystal clear whether you like it or not today. That's the name of your book, and it's a book about helping people who are stressed and poverty stricken, as well as not on the chain of potential success, but help them get on that ladder and help them continue on the ladder. And you've been an inspiration to lots of people from your own life, from which you have learned, and then you're able to tell them how to help their own, help themselves in their own lives.
Yes. You said that so well, because I just feel like my story is just one story. There are many millions of stories, billions. There's a lot of stories out there of people who have almost went through this journey of the soul almost. And so I just want to show students and people from my community that is possible. And so I just use my story as kind of the framework and distill lessons throughout the teachings or throughout the writing. And so I just appreciate that you mentioned it. And yeah, I'm excited to see what's next.
Well, you're welcome. And I'm glad to have done it in a way that pleased you. The idea that you're just one person who's had one experience is also connected to, if you have this experience, other people are also having this experience or will have this experience. And you want to help change their trajectory. And it's the same with meaningful coincidences. As I've told you and shown you, I'm writing a book now about my own meaningful coincidences. And it starts off, I generally thought, oh, I'm so special, I have all these coincidences, blah, 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 blah. It's one of the problems with having a lot of synchronicities is you don't realize that your coincidences are probably almost like your life, that other people are experiencing them. And that's why I like being able to say they're a common part of everyday life, but they're still amazing. If you're looking for probiotics on Bali, go to this cafe with this mindset, or if you want to be on a podcast, think about it, and you'll get there. Especially Bali makes it a little easier. It also happens in this life as well, outside of Bali. I so much appreciate being able to talk with you and find out about Bali.
Thank you. And I appreciate it too.
Well, we both like it, and Daniel Ingram, who I've interviewed on this podcast too, put us together. And I'm probably going to be in one of his meetings this afternoon, because I've never gone to one. So on Zoom. So thank you, Crystal Harrell, for being on my show, and thank you even more for being able to open your heart to me so that I could open my heart to you, and we could have a good time with heart-mind connections, which is what we just did.
Yes, thank you so much, Bernie, for having me. I told you before we started that I will feel really honored because of just being in the space with you and so many people who have graced this stage. So thank you.
You're welcome. This psychosphere is our mental atmosphere, like a hologram of cosmic consciousness.